this was a huge pain point for us, but also a huge discovery at Harley, is that we see a business for who it is, not for what it does. Because what it does is obvious. You make things. You make cabinets, your plumbers, your painters, your accountants, your dentists, whatever that is. Well, that's not what people remember. What people remember is the humanity behind a business. It's the human experience. It's who they talk to. It's the tone of that person's voice. It's the effort that that person made to somehow, you know, delight you or make you feel important or good about yourself. Absent that, you're just a faceless business.
You are listening to the Culture Coach Podcast. This is the place where CEOs and people-first leaders come to boost productivity, extinguish burnout, and cultivate a vibrant culture that reflects a fully integrated mission, vision, and core values. Get ready to take your culture to the next level. I am your host, Wendy Brand. Welcome back to the Culture Coach Podcast. Thank you for joining me. Before I tell you about my amazing guest, I want to make you aware of something that's very special to me and exciting. If you follow me on LinkedIn, or if you know me well at all, you likely know that this week I launched my very first online culture course. The podcast is dropping on Wednesday, and we're closing the doors to the course on Friday, October 4th. So because time and space is limited, I want to tell you a little bit about this course before I get into the podcast. So this is my Thrive Culture Academy 101, Set Your Compass. And I call it 101 because in January of 2025, I'll be launching the full curriculum, the full Thrive Culture Academy. But this is entry level. This is the foundational course that organizations need that are either A, just starting out, or B, they're companies that are struggling with their culture and not sure maybe what the problem is or just where to start. If that is you, then this course is for you. So if you're one of my loyal listeners and you're catching this episode when it drops, then you have an opportunity to sign up for not only the course, but my free workshop on Thursday, October 3rd at 10 a.m. Eastern. And you can find the sign up for that workshop at culturecoachwendy.com/free workshop. So this workshop allows you to take a free culture quiz to determine the current state of your culture, and then I'll provide you with the steps needed to move forward based on my Thrive Culture framework. Or if you want to sign up now for the course, again, the doors are closing on that Friday, October 4th. You can learn more about that or sign up at culturecoachwendy.com/compass, C-O-M-P-A-S-S. Okay, enough about me. I had such a great conversation with my guest, Ken Schmidt, this week. And one of Ken's great career successes came from his formerly held leadership role in Harley-Davidson Motor Company's against all odds turnaround from the brink of financial ruin to global dominance during the 1990s. That transformation was based on his highly unconventional repositioning of the motorcycle icon's marketplace presence. Ken shifted the company's culture from a product-first mindset to one that prioritized being memorable on how they connect with people. The company swiftly grew to become the most successful player in the fiercely competitive worldwide motorcycle industry, with the highest levels of customer loyalty of any consumer hardware brand in existence. Ken is also the author of Make Some Noise, The Unconventional Road to Dominance, and ghostwriter of 100 Years of Harley-Davidson. This was a best-selling motorsports book of all time. He's also host of the Tailgating with Geniuses podcast and co-founder of Torque Sessions Leadership Training. Ken, I love the way that he talks about this. He has seen the world on two wheels, partied with rock stars and movie legends, met presidents and royalty, and can't stand still. He lives by a personal and professional philosophy that states, never do what's expected. Always make yourself as noticeably different as possible and have a lot more fun than you're supposed to. I hope you enjoy this episode. All right. Welcome back to the Culture Coach Podcast. I've got with me today, Ken Schmidt. Ken, welcome to the show.
Hi, Wendy. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I'm so excited for this conversation. Start by telling us a little bit about yourself and your journey to where you are now.
Oh, it's been if I say so myself, it's been a pretty cool journey. I am a lifelong, ridiculously over the top enthusiast in the sport of motorcycling. So that somehow got burned into my brain as a kid. And to be able to then turn that passion into a career, when I got hired by Harley-Davidson Motor Company, you know, decades ago, was kind of the absolute penultimate dream come true for me, surrounded by motorcycles all day. Really, really cool stuff, really great people. So I was part of the turnaround team there that took the business that was then teetering on bankruptcy and through a lot of hard work and a lot of good fortune turned it into the, you know, kind of world dominator that it is today. And in the ensuing years, I've been a consultant and a speaker going all around the world, telling people what I learned going through this journey at Harley-Davidson, how to make a business more competitive, ridiculously competitive, all using techniques that no one ever really tends to think about. And it, you know, kind of turned that into a great second life. And now I do podcasting and consulting and, you know, talk to cool people like you.
All right. I love it. And I think we've got some synergies here. I've listened to your podcast some and really, really enjoyed that. I love the way that you talk about humanizing the business. So tell me a little bit about when you talk about creating that competitive edge, what does that look like for you? What does that mean to you?
Well, first of all, what it looks like to me is we have to be able to stand back and look way more holistically and humanistically at our business, because what most businesses do, and I would, you know, put this in like the 95% to 99% range, is most businesses tend to focus on doing what they do really well. And if what we're doing really well, we can do a tiny little bit better tomorrow, faster, smarter, less expensively, well, then good for us and we're winning. And then at the end of the year, they wonder why they're not winning, why it's so difficult to gain any type of, you know, competitive leverage in the marketplace, where they're seen as, you know, a commodity, where people shop price, where people see no difference between their business and the ones that they compete against. And all of that is fixable, because it just, the business is focused on the wrong stuff. It's not until you put a human face on a business, until customers can humanize a business, that it becomes real, becomes differentiated, or in any way becomes competitive. And that's what people overlook. Let's talk about and promote what we do. That's what individuals do that work for a living. You know, I should be promoted because I'm the best accountant. Well, guess what? No, you're not. You're competing against other people who are really, really good accountants. So what else have you got? If all I know you for is what you do, you're not competitive.
Mm-hmm. So what's the differentiator?
Well, let's take a little more scientific look at this.
Yeah.
If you're looking at, we'll look at a business first, because this is something every business is grappling with.
Yeah.
How do we become more competitive and attract and keep people and you know, make good profit? The first thing that we have to do is be alerted to the fact that the way people see your business and anything that's in their head, or, you know, in their heart, if they're thinking about your business, or if they're, you know, God willing, actually talking about your business, is everything that we think and see and believe to be true about a business is a mere reflection of the culture of that business. Because, and this is the, this was a huge pain point for us, but also a huge discovery at Harley, is that, you know, we see a business for who it is, not for what it does. Because what it does is obvious. You make things, you make cabinets, your plumbers, your painters, your accountants, your dentists, whatever that is. Well, that's not what people remember. What people remember is the humanity behind a business. It's the human experience. It's who they talk to. It's the tone of that person's voice. It's the effort that that person made to somehow, you know, delight you or make you feel important or good about yourself. Absent that, you're just a faceless business.
Yeah.
You might as well just, you know, be online and have no presence whatsoever. And what does every CEO in the world want now, other than, you know, more profit and less employee turnover? They want to start at the top. They want to be the most demanded business. They want to be the most talked about business. They want their personal reputations to be stellar, and they don't do anything. They don't make that a priority. They just assume that it's going to happen. And as long as we focus on doing what we do and do it better, we're going to be great in the long run. And it just flat out, that's a formula for disaster.
Yeah. I recently rewatched the Simon Sinek TED Talk from 2009. That was the kind of the preface to his book in 2011, yeah. Start With Why. And he draws the three circles, and on the outside, it's the what, the how, and then the why. And he said, most businesses talk about themselves from the outside in. What do we do? But they don't start with, you know, why do they do it? Mm-hmm. Creating that, connecting to purpose. When you talk about, you know, how organizations can differentiate themselves, mm-hmm. where do you point them?
All right. So what I always do, because a lot of times businesses will say, it, like, you know, what we do is boring. We write code for, you know, back dental office,
right?
Software billing processes. And that's boring. And there's nothing worse than hearing somebody condemn their employer that way or their company that way. But people do it all the time. So, you know, there's a difference between, you know, big, sexy consumer stuff like Harley Davidson and what we do. And I say, actually, there's not. Because at the end of the day, doesn't matter what we're selling, is people buy from other people. People remember other people. People prefer other people. People talk about other people. So at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what's being sold. If I like you a little bit more than I like the people that you're competing against, you win, period. And that's where things get lost, because people think, well, you know, we want everybody to know about all the great features and benefits of our product and all the value adds that we have. Kidding me. You think that's what people remember about your business, is the way you measure what you do, what your customer satisfaction scores are, any of that stuff. In a dream world, that would be great, but that's not reality. All right. So we have to focus on the reality side. And I do that because I start any conversation, Wendy, with a business, no matter how big or small it is, or even individuals within a business, with the three questions that I typed up on a typewriter. There, I just dated myself on my first day of work at Harley Davidson. It is the three most vitally important questions in business, in competition, in personal or business competition. Three questions are, what are people saying, you know, about us or about me? Mm-hmm. What do I want them to say? And third, what am I doing to get them to say it? Because outside of that, I mean, this is reputation. This is the most valuable asset that you have. Ask people, what do you want people to say about you? And I guarantee, Wendy, the first thing, listen, you could be the CEO of a company with 100,000 employees. Because I hear this all the time. So what do you want people to say about your business? And the guys will kind of fold their arms behind the head and lean back. Well, I guess. I go, you guess? You're at the head of a major corporation or a major business. You own a business and you have to guess it, what you want people to say about you? How can your employees possibly know why they're here? Right? What is their purpose? If we're not aligned on that, how we want to be remembered and spoken of, if we're not actively managing the reputation of this business, somebody else will gladly do it for us. And that those are all the voices in the market that say they're exactly the same. We're cheaper than they are. We're better than they are. We're faster than, you know, all of those kind of things. And you open the door for that to happen. Because you didn't focus on, hey, what are the pillars of who we are as a business that we want people to remember and talk, you know, our awesomeness, our coolness, how amazing we are, how passionate we are, how committed we are, how glorious we are, how fun we are, how smart we are. I mean, those are human qualities Those are qualities that we attach to human beings, not to a business. And that's where businesses get lost, because they just want to be known for what they do.
Yeah. And so once you have organizations think about that and define that,
yeah,
how do you get the employees to connect with that?
Okay. That's a really good question. Anybody that works for a living, consciously or subconsciously, models the behavior of the people running the business. The attitude, the behavior that's exhibited by leaders, the language that they're using, what they're saying is what people that work in the business say and do. That's not a theory. That's a fact. All behavior is learned, so that leaders who are detached, uninvolved, only want to talk about numbers and data, have employees that quickly become bored, disinterested, don't understand what the business is about. You know, those are the people that are going to leave,
and
go work somewhere else. So you're always going to have that side of the equation. But then what we also need to be really cognizant of is that people support what they help create or feel that they've helped to create. And that's everything from product to culture, to language, to music. If I'm playing a part in creating something, well, I'm going to support it. I'm not going to speak ill of something that I'm involved in. Right. So one of the things that I always work with on businesses, and have, you know, built a wonderful career that's taken me around the world, I said, let's look at changing the vernacular of this business. Let's come up with, you know, 3 to 5 words or just short, simple phrases that you would like to have pop into people's heads the first time, or, you know, anytime they think of you, or anytime they need to, you know, buy whatever it is that you're selling, or, you know, something within that category. And the important thing behind that is you can't pick words that any of your competitors are using. So what people tend to go, well, you know, what, you know, 3 to 5 words would you like to pop into people's minds when they think of your business? And this, oh, you know, quality products and, you know, great service and, you know, customer commitment, right? Everybody says that's not differentiating language here. It's like, let's put some thinking caps on here and come up with language that speaks to the culture here. The human things that we do, not the business things that we do, that people will remember, if for no other reason than they remember because they didn't expect to hear it. And people say, well, like what? We're plumbers. I said, that's what you do. You could be the coolest plumbers. You could be the best looking. You could be the best dressed. I mean, it's these things that you think of that can differentiate the business. And the fun thing about this, and what makes it real to employees, is this is kind of an all hands thing. We can do this through meetings with a handful of employees, or you know, interdepartmental things where we've got representation for people throughout the business. Let's put our creative thinking hats on here. Let's come up with this language. I'm not going to tell you what it is. You know, if I'm the CEO, I want us collectively to come up with that. And I've seen it happen 1,000. It just works because, first of all, it's really, for a lot of businesses, the first time they actively looked at themselves as a competitor, not as somebody who goes to market. And as a competitor, I mean, okay, if you're looking at, you're a cabinet maker.
Yeah.
And you look at, well, let's look at who we compete against. So let's go look at their website, or their selling tools, or their brochures, or their social media presence, whatever that is. Let's look at how they define themselves. And what you find really quickly is, you know, if you look at the, you know, about us thing on somebody's website, that's, you know, it's focus on quality and craftsmanship and all the stuff that you would expect to hear. So then the first lesson to the people that work at the business that, you know, we're hoping to reshape is, why would you ever want to be thought of the same way that they are? Right. In what universe is being talked about as a, the same way people talk about competitor? You know, when's that ever a good thing?
Yeah.
And it's not so. What this has done, and what looking what others have said, and it's it, you find the patterns very, very quickly that everybody says the same thing, is they're really helping us here because they're telling us the language that we're never going to use again. We're going to strike that from our vocabulary. One, because people expect it, but two, when they don't hear it, they notice something different. So then employees within the business, let's come up with a different vernacular. And they'll ask, well, how'd you do that at, you know, Harley, a company that's known for products? This is, first of all, we took product out of the discussion. Mm. We're a lifestyle business. We sell freedom, right? We sell individuality and camaraderie and rebellion. Like, next question.
Yeah.
Well, wait, well, you're not talking about that. That's right. And if it made you go, well, I wonder why they didn't talk about it, then that means we're winning. That means you notice something different here. That means we can actually have a discussion. And if we're discussing things, now I'm able to show you, or you'll be able to hear through the, you know, the tone of my voice, you know, what I'm about and what this business is about, what we are about as people. Because at the end of the day, you know, the one person that you speak to at a company, think about all the times you called an insurance company and got, please hold, and your call is important to us, and please stay on. You know, we all yeah. hate it. But the first human being that you talk to is the embodiment of every human being that works there. So the please hold, the person who's bored or disinterested or is having a very hard time understanding you because they don't speak your language, whatever that is, that human being, that is the they by which your business, they're terrible. They're awesome. They're amazing. They're the coolest. They're so smart. They're clever. They're passionate. Or, you know, they stink. They suck. They're the same as everybody else, all based on that conversation with that one person. So that's where culture comes to the fore. That's why it's so important. And that's why leading with humanity trumps leading with product and service.
I love that so much. And, you know, this is in line with the work that I do also.
Yeah, it was, yep.
And so it's exciting to hear your approach on it. I think I love, you know, the piece about just differentiating and not coming up with the same words and phrases. And it's just so important. What would you say is the most common mistake then that businesses make in this path?
Okay, if they are going down the path, first of all, it just thrills me to know that they're even thinking about it, that they're making it a priority. But what businesses tend to do is make this a marketing function. This is a job for our marketing people. This is a job for our sales
people. HR.
Right? Yeah. And we say, no, this is it's all hands. It's all, everybody needs to be involved in this. Everybody needs to know what the language is. But what will happen is they'll come up with this new go-to-market vernacular. And I love that. So you're now at second base. But a lot of times what business will do is stop there. Mm. And see, what happens is if our behavior doesn't match the language, there's an immediate disconnect. And that's the, you know, every car dealership in your town, we're number one in service. Well, how can everybody be number one in service if the behavior isn't backing it up? If, you know, we're really passionate about real estate. If I'm not hearing that in your voice, if I'm not hearing that from other people, right? It's the old, you know, you're not passionate about what you do until other people tell me that you are. Because, you know, we tend to not believe what people say about themselves. We believe what we experience ourselves and hear from us. So the behavior of the business has to be in line with the language. What I always call it is a kind of a two-column grid on must say, must do. Here's what we always have to say. This is the language that we need to use to make sure people remember. But here's what we need to do. Here's the behavior that we need to exhibit. Here's the tone of our voice. Here's the physical thing, if we're an actual customer-facing business, that we have to do to bring that language to life. Because if we don't do that, everyone misses the point.
Yeah.
Or because it's the actual, it's the behavior that people remember more than the language.
Yes. And I understand the connection with the people, with the employees. Like that's my focus and I get that. But how does it look for the customer? Like, how do you create that loyalty with customer with some of this internal language?
Great question. Well, let's look bigger picture first. I always ask a business, what are we here to do? No matter what the business, what are we here to do? And people, we'll serve, take care of our customers. And that's not working. Well, that's what we do every day, but it's not working, because if it was working as well as you wanted it to, you'd be crushing everybody in the marketplace. And I said, okay, let's take an example of something here. It's what do all human beings, that's 100% of our species, what do we do to any source of delight in our lives, no matter how small that delight might be? And the answer is we return to it faithfully. We seek it out until it fails to delight us. We're a joy-seeking species. And what I just did is I defined what loyalty is. Mm-hmm. We return to any source of delight until it fails to delight us, which means we're not loyal to a product. We're not loyal to a company, to a brand name. We're not loyal to a service. We're loyal to the people behind it, because that's all human beings are capable of. We can't humanize, a computer or a bulldozer or a ball bearing or a cabinet or software. It's not possible. All we can do is relate to things on human terms. So if someone within a business says or does something in my presence that delights me, and I don't mean delight as in backflips and singing, dancing elephants, as is somebody just made the focus on me, made me feel a little bit better, just a tiny little bit better about myself, made me like you and appreciate the effort that you made on my behalf, maybe put a smile on my face because I'm copying and modeling the smile that's on your face, which all human beings do, then bang, somebody's making a difference. That works. Absent that, it's another commoditized transaction. So we're not here to serve. We're not here to sell. We're not here to be more efficient, because there's not a customer in the world who cares about that. Your internal knitting is your, I don't care how you made it. I don't care what it costs you to make it. I know what you do. And I'm buying a bicycle and there's 50 bike manufacturers. Well, who am I going to buy from? Right? Who? Not which bike am I going to buy? Who am I going to buy from? Once the human element enters the equation, and once a business is aggressively working to ensure that that happens, they begin to sense a sea change in their business. Any business, I don't care how boring you say you are, is capable of being a source of delight for people. Remember, it's not massive delight. It's just remembering that the person that you are talking to or texting with or responding to an email, that person sees themselves as the center of the universe, because they are. The world revolves around me, just the same way it revolves around you. Everything you think about or feel or remember or process is thought about or felt, experienced relative to how it impacts me. So when I'm talking to you or reaching out to you as a business because I need a quote on something, or I'm looking to buy some insurance or to buy a car or something, and the first thing that you do as a business person is lapse into business speak and talking about what your business does, you've already created a counter-human experience for me. You didn't make this about me. You made it about you. I'm who's important here. I'm the one who's making the buying decision, not you. And that too often that gets lost. It's, I just need to answer this person's questions as quickly as I can to get them on their way. That's not the way you should ever look at conversation with anybody important to the business. What do I want this person to remember about their time that they're about to spend with me, whether it's 5 seconds, 5 minutes, or 5 days? Is it, I'm not focused on that. I'm just a supplier.
You're kind of blowing my mind right now.
Oh,
because what you are saying is that, I mean, yes, you have to have a good product or service.
Everybody does.
Yes.
Everybody does.
But what you are saying is that the people are really the most important thing, that they create the interactions. They are what is going to sell your product or service. That's what's going to keep a customer loyal. That is what is going to cause other people to stay in the organization, mm-hmm. is the human experience. And so how cool would it be if organizations realized that their return on investment, if they invest in the people, just how impactful that could be on their business?
Oh, so true. They're all investing every day in their people on the wrong side of the ledger.
Yes.
We're investing in this constant training of people because we can't keep them.
Yes.
Why did they leave? They left us to get more money.
No.
Please.
False.
And everybody knows that. But it makes us feel better to say it wasn't our fault. It was theirs.
Right.
Somebody else offered more money. I always tell folks that every association that an outsider to your business has, customer, potential customer, lender, vendor, supplier, anyone who's important, every one of those associations is a mirror reflection of the culture of the business. We see you for who you are, not what you do. Therefore, the culture drives everything. And every reflection that we have of a business's culture is a mirror reflection of the attitude and behavior of the people running the business. Job one for leaders isn't selling more stuff. It's shaping our culture.
Yes.
This is how we want to be seen. This is how we want to be remembered and talked about.
Yes.
So that we're that positive they out in the market. They're the best. I love these people. They're awesome. They're so good at what they do. All of that, when the word they's in front of it in a positive way, that means they're talking about your people.
Yes.
Not the thing that you make.
And you're right. It's not, you know, yes, training and development is good for the employees, but it shouldn't be used as a magic bullet or employee engagement. Let's make sure everyone's getting developed. That's not, you have to look at the individual because we all want and need different things. And maybe someone does want more money and that's important to mm-hmm. them, but somebody else may just want to be able to work from home once a week, you know, so that whatever. And really looking at them as individuals, I think, is also so important.
Well, what do we say about loyalty? Is that people return to faithfully seek out any source of delight in their lives until it fails to delight them. And mm-hmm. then we say as a company, well, we've got a problem keeping people. Why aren't they loyal to us? We just answered your own question, right? It's like, okay. We're either actively working to, you know, be a source of delight for people. And again, that's not the, hey, everybody, you know, get up and dance.
Right. No.
If I see that the people above me are taking a active interest in me, engaging me in conversation, not about what I'm doing, not about, you know, here's some things that you could do better. Who wants to hear that? But it's, where do you want to go with your life, right? Is this what you want to do forever? Where do you want to go? You got any dreams? How can we help you get there? Help me better understand. Tell me about your kids. What are you doing this weekend? Oh, that's so cool. What I always tell people is that it's two things. It's if you want to delight the people that work for you or that work under you or that work with you, stop focusing on being interesting to them because they're not interested in you. Okay, because you're not working to do this. Focus more on being interested. Ask them questions about themselves because every human being, and don't care what you do for a living, how old you are, young you are, the color of your skin, or the guy that you pray to, we all have one favorite topic of discussion, and that's ourselves. If somebody that I view as important is asking me about me, mm-hmm. I like that.
Yeah.
Someone's paying attention. Somebody noticed. Somebody cares about, I like that. So I like you a little bit more because you asked me that. And I always tell people is don't just ask the question. Tell me about your kid or what'd you do this weekend? You have to react to it. Oh, you know, I rode my bicycle. That's so cool. Where did you go? It's the money and all the memorabilities and the react. When you're reacting to what somebody's telling you, you keep talking. which is exactly what, as a leader, you should want that person doing, because I'm making this person happy right now. They're having a little bit of personal fulfillment right now because of me. They might be thinking about getting another job for an extra, you know, dollar an hour. They're going to think twice about it now because they're not going to get that over there.
Right. I love that. This has been such an interesting and great conversation. If there are leaders out there, CEOs, founders that maybe can't bring in you or I to do consulting work, where would you tell them to start? Like, where's the first place they can go to start making this shift?
Well, the self-serving comment about the, well, you could start by reading my book, Make Some Noise, The Unconventional Road to Dominance, where I basically lay out an entire roadmap of here's how you do this. Here's why it's important. Here's how people react to it. Here's not just why you should be doing it, but how to do it.
Which works out really.
People don't just like being told what to do. They want to see the how. How do I do it? So do that. Or anybody that you can ask me a question anytime, Ken at kenspeaks.com, or you go to my website, kenspeaks.com, or you could find me on LinkedIn or listen to my Tailgating with Geniuses podcast. The better answer to your question is how do you do this? Is you have to decide, first of all, you have to make this a priority. It's not a marketing function. It's not a sales function. It's the role of leadership.
Yeah.
It's job one. And once you make that decision, we're going to fundamentally change the way people see and experience and remember this business. And we're going to use our culture as the lever to make that happen. Once you make that decision, the dominoes start to fall. But you know, absent that, it's just another program that you turn over to HR or sales and marketing. And we all know those tend to die.
Yes.
Die on the vine.
Awesome. Well, this has been great. I'm going to put the link to your website, to your LinkedIn, to your book in the show notes so people can find you quickly. Any parting words for our audience?
Parting words are think about the people that are important to you. Think about the person who's going to call you on the phone next. If I had my phone in front of me, you see, I have the two big letters on my phone, R and R. They stand for remember and repeat. My phone's ringing, or I'm about to get an email. I'm about to respond to somebody. It's not my job to answer their questions or give them what they expect. I have to say and do things they're going to remember and repeat. Repeat isn't come back for more of or tell others about, because if I'm not focused on that, I'm just answering questions. I'm serving, and I don't want to serve. I want to be that memorable source of delight for people.
I love that. Thank you so much. This has been a great conversation.
Thank you, Wendy. Fun. Good stuff.